Okay. In general, particularly for the Monday night shiur, we go for the ripped from the headlines approach. And this happens to be a topic that is not short on headlines. There have been many, many cases of this. The one I chose is the one that's the most recent. There's a case currently being litigated right next door to us in Idaho. A very interesting case. You can read it here. There is a fellow. Actually, we start with a woman. There's a woman who underwent one of these DNA testing sites, and they broke some odd news to her. They said, as far as we can tell, you're not really related to your parents. However, we are related to this guy whose DNA we happen to have from I don't know where, a guy named Gerald Mortimer. Not Mortimer Zussman, but Gerald Mortimer. That is his name, right? So who is this Gerald Mortimer? She said in her life she never heard of the guy. She's by her parents' house, and she finds out that Gerald Mortimer actually signed her birth certificate. Dun, 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 dun. And then after further looking into it, she finds out, in fact, that Gerald Mortimer was the fertility doctor who helped out her parents. And in fact, it seemed that he more than helped out her parents.
He was overzealous.
Right, he's mamish. He went the extra yard. He was willing to do whatever was necessary.
Is he still a free man?
He was once the president of the Latter-day Saints Church Temple, and he was on a church mission in the Philippines. You'll be happy to note. What? No, it's most definitely in Utah. I would be pretty sure on that one. So,
what?
So,
Boise, Idaho.
Well, again, there are.
It's an LDS temple, not the Holy
Right, he wasn't the Rav Rashi. Right. So, and his defense is an interesting one. Mortimer, meanwhile, denies the allegations. Right, as the old saying goes, he denies the alligator, he denies the allegations. But however, he doesn't seem to deny it so much when you read his quote. Dr. Mortimer admits only that Ms. Ashby decided to use anonymous donor sperm semen in an artificial insemination process as long as, in Dr. Mortimer's judgment, the anonymous donor sperm was appropriate and safe. Meaning that the parents asked for anonymous, and he decided that he could find a guy who's would be willing to do it, and which sure sounds like he's admitting it. Mortimer's attorneys, Raymond Powers and Portia Rauer, wrote on his behalf, Dr. Mortimer has no recollection of having utilized his sperm semen in the artificial insemination project with Ms. Ashby, and therefore denies the allegations. He doesn't remember. Yeah, things like this could slip your mind all the time. So that is the case. That is case number one. We then give you a snippet from an article in the National Post, which is a Canadian publication, which gives a rundown of similar cases. In 1999, a New York State woman of Italian descent gave birth to twin boys, one white, the other black. Well, there's a surprise. The woman had undergone an embryo transfer to Manhattan Fertility Clinic the same day as a black couple were also undergoing IVF. But an embryo from the black woman ended up in the white woman, partly because the pipette hadn't been properly flushed between transfers. Only the white woman became pregnant. Well said. Like a true doctor. The couples initially agreed to a shared custody agreement, but ended up in a custody dispute. Said Toronto fertility lawyer Sherry Levitan, the genetic parents won. Interestingly, so this white woman carried a black baby for 9 months and then was forced by the courts to give it up. Next, Levitan was involved in a case about 15 years ago involving a Toronto area couple. An embryo was created using donor egg that was supposed to be sperm from the male partner. The surrogate carried the embryo as part of the court application to obtain a declaration of parentage. DNA testing was performed. The DNA testing came back and nobody was related to the child. They ran the test again. It wasn't a DNA mistake. It was clearly a laboratory mix-up. We don't know if it was an embryo mix-up or a sperm mix-up. That being said, the parents chose not to sue for negligence because they didn't want to risk losing the child, even though nobody was related to this child. In 2013, Ottawa's Dr. Norman Barwin, a once-acclaimed fertility doctor, never a good way to be referred to, and a past president of the Planned Parenthood Canada, was banned from practicing for 2 months by the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario disciplinary panel after admitting to artificially inseminating 3 women with the wrong specimen over a 2-period decade. The children are likely now in their 20s. So it seems from here that there are many types of mix-ups that take place in fertility treatments. Some of them, we would say, bishogeg, and some of them would be bemazin, right? The case of the Italian couple, that would seem to be a case of shogeg, an accident, right? What happened in Toronto, that would seem to be an accident. What happened in Idaho? That probably, as much as he's having trouble recalling what happened, I don't think it was an accident. Certain things you just don't leave laying around. Yes?
There was a Jewish doctor.
Is this a question?
No, I was.
Okay, so moving on. Okay, we're going to hold off then.
Well,
oh, busted. So that. So you will. So we'll have story hour afterwards. So that being said, right, we have these cases all the time. There are cases out there which I could have brought to you, of fertility doctors who have been zochet to around 600 children. What? What a helpful guy, delivery man. So the bottom line here is that when you undergo the process, there's 2 issues that you have to be careful with. One issue is the issue of a doctor trying to push up their numbers. So, for example, if there is a doctor who is treating people that have male factor fertility issues, so the way judges in fertility, the way doctors in fertility clinics are judged is by how many live pregnancies they produce. In the event that you can replace the less than optimum sperm with optimum sperm, you're going to do very well. Your numbers are going to go up. Your practice will be very successful. And therefore, there is definitely, shall we say, a yetzer hara, tibimi makayim puravu repeatedly in order that your numbers are strong numbers. That's problem number one. Problem number two that we're concerned about is just negligence, right? All embryos kind of look alike,
yeah.
Right? Right, all sperm samples, all egg samples all kind of look alike. And yet, you should keep track. But truth be told, as we know from these cases and many, many, many others, mistakes happen. Right? One person in the laboratory makes a mistake. There's a mislabeling or what have you not. It's going to go through the whole way. So the question is, how does that affect a Jewish couple who wants to undergo fertility treatment? To what extent do they have to be concerned about this? And to put it bluntly, does your fertility clinic need a mashgiach? What?
I never thought of that.
You never thought about it, but right now you would be amazed at how many currently have mashgichot.
Really?
Right. Overwhelmingly, we'll discuss why, the mashgiach in fertility clinics tends to be female. We start with a Gemara in Yevamos. So, we start with the Gemara in Yevamos, and the Gemara in Yevamos explains why we have to be so very careful when it comes to somebody's heritage. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Hare Shabal Noshim Harbe, if somebody sleeps around with many women, and he doesn't really remember who he's been with, given that he's been so many. Or a woman who has had many, many partners as well and has lost track at this point. What that will lead to is once you don't know who the parents are, you'll have parents marrying children, you'll have siblings marrying one another. And eventually everybody in the world will be mamzerim if you're not careful with these things. So the Gemara here says you have to be very, very, very careful when it comes to these what we call yuchsin, right, relations, that you have to know who you can marry and who you can't marry. So therefore it's something that we have to be extremely careful with. This is more important than making sure that your meat is kosher, etc. If your meat's not kosher, So it's a bad thing. You'll be chay of Malkus if you did it b'mezid. But that's as far as it goes. Right? Here, if you're not careful, you're going to lead to chiyuve misa, right? Things that bring the death penalty. The children that come from this will be mamzerim, and this will go on. What?
Could be arayas.
It will be arayas, right? Yeah. This is a chiyuve misa.
Yeah.
Right? And that will lead to generations being messed up.
Remind me what arayas is.
It's a gilui arayas, is one of the three cardinal sins, sexual immorality, in the most serious way. Based on this, we have certain halachas that have been set into place. So, for example, if you look at number two, the Mishnah says, "Hayavamo lo tachos lo tizyabim ad shi yesh losh losha chadoshim." If a woman loses her husband and she is childless, she has to either do yibum, right, meaning she has to marry the brother-in-law, or chalitza, a ceremony by which she is allowed to marry whoever she wants. She cannot undergo either of those until 3 months after the husband has passed away. And this isn't a rule just by Yibam.
Why not Chalitza? Yibam, I understand why she can't do it, but why not Chalitza?
So again, the Gemara explains it. We actually discussed this a few summers ago. If you do Chalitza and she was pregnant, the Chalitza doesn't work. And then if she miscarries, she's going to be Chayv and Chalitza then afterwards. So, but
if the chalitza doesn't work and she ends up marrying somebody, but the child is from the original husband.
No, the question is, what if she was pregnant from the original husband,
right,
and then she miscarries, then she has a serious problem. Because, again, if a woman, this has happened, 9/11 this happened, unfortunately, a few times.
Right.
Men died.
Right.
They did not have any children.
Right.
But they left a pregnant wife.
Right.
If the child is born alive and well, then there is no need for chalitza. If the woman miscarries, then there you do need a chalitza. In the event, so the question is, well, why don't we do a chalitza now just to be safe while she's pregnant?
Yeah.
Right, and that way, no matter what happens, she'll be okay going forward. So the answer is, you're not allowed to do that. This is all beyond the scope
of what we're speaking.
Right.
I get it.
But not only that, this isn't just a case of Yibam and Chalitza, which are relatively rare, thankfully. V'chein kol shar noshim lo yis'arsu v'lo yinosu ash yulehem shosh chadoshim. Echad besuros v'echad be'ulos, echad grushos v'echad almonos, echad nesuos v'echad arusos. That in all of these cases, if a woman loses their husband, and they do have children, still, she can't get married for 3 months, right? Even though we're not waiting for anything. If they get divorced, she can't get married for 3 months, right? In the event that he drops dead under the chuppah, and they never consummated the marriage, you still have to wait 3 months. It's a low plug, etc. The idea being that we are super careful in this case. We want to know who is the father. Even though practically it might not make a huge difference, when it comes to areas of yuchsin, we are extremely, extremely careful to make sure that we know who the parents are. The Gemara explains this again in Yevamos in number 3. V'chein shar kol noshim bishlama yevama kedamran. I get it. Okay, Yevama, I get why we have to wait. Right? Because in the event she, in fact, was pregnant, right? Then she's marrying her brother-in-law, and that's a violation. Ela shar kol nashim amai, but what's so bad the other one? So she's pregnant either to her first husband or her second husband. What's the difference? Either way, the child's allowed to be part of Klal Yisrael.
Right?
Either way, everything was okay. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Mishum de Amar Kra, Li Yosalcha Le'elokim Lozarecha Acharecha. No, it is important that we know who the father is. Period. We very much care to keep our yuchsin straight. Not only that, but if a woman converts, she has to wait 3 months before she gets married. Why?
Same reason.
That we have to make sure what is the status of the child? So technically you should wait as well. Now, do we practically wait? So again, this might be an excellent topic on its own. So so usually we always have to wait. It's not really 3 months. It's 92 days. And what if the couple has split up 4 years ago and she's been fighting for her get? Does she still have to wait?
Does she?
What if she took a pregnancy test?
Right. So?
Right? Then does she have to? So that's a discussion.
Okay.
It sounds from here that she would still have to, even though there is no real possibility that that a child she would have is from the first. What if she's 75 years old?
Does she really have to wait 3 months?
But again, these are all similar.
Okay.
To what extent are we concerned what we call in the law the fertile octogenarian? Right, hacha mayr hafkin ikas. Why by geras? Hachinam ikas hafkin bein zera shenizra bekedusha leb zera sharon nizra bekedusha. We want to know the difference whether a child was conceived while Jewish or conceived not Jewish, even though the kid's going to end up Jewish at the end. So that's what we say, that we are very, very careful about this in general. Now, that being said, there is a concept out there that my wife gave birth to five lovely children. There is an assumption that I'm their father. We have never undergone DNA tests to prove this. Right? Some they look like me. Some they look like my wife. You know how it is. So the question here is, you know, if we're so sure about this, why don't we worry about paternity in every case? So number four, we say be'ilos. Rav Mari Omer asks, so the question is, how do we know? There's a general rule in Judaism that we follow the majority. Where does that come from? So one of the proofs is, asher me'maka ovi ve'imo. So if somebody strikes their father, God forbid, they are liable for the death penalty. That's pretty serious. But wait a second, he can give a defense. I deny that he's my father. There's a very interesting story they tell from Rav Yonis and Eibshitz. Mason actually was a very sharp young man, it seems. So at one point, someone asked him the following question. So the halacha is, if your father and your mother ask for something at the same time, what do you do? Jenny, what do you do if your father and mother are asking for at the same time? There you go, that is right. Now, someone asked, but wait a second. Your mother is Vada, your mother. Is definitely your mother.
No,
there's no doubt about that. Your father... We're only based on, you know, majority, right? It's a suffix.
Everybody thinks so.
Shouldn't you give it to your mother based on that? Right? Bari Vashem, as we say. So supposedly, the Rebbe Rav Yonis had answered, he said, would it really be honor to my mother to say that my father was a suffix? So, but that, the Gemara says, that when it comes to your father in general, you know, the odds are... So Rav Mari Oma, Asya be Maka Ovi V'ima Dorim Rachmana Katli. Right? If you hit your foot, we're gonna put you to death over it. Maybe you can make an argument that. We follow the majorities. And even if your mother was unfaithful, still, as unfaithful as she was, the majority of the time she was with a man, it was likely your father. Right? And therefore we follow that majority, and that's the rule. So we have a rule in general that says, Rov be'ilos acher habal. When it comes to who is the father, you do not require any other proof. The mere fact that the man was married to your mother, right, unless there's a strong reason to suspect otherwise, makes that person your father. So the question is, well, what about in our case? In the case of a woman who's been married for 15 years, and she never got pregnant. And she never got pregnant, we find out, because she has blocked fallopian tubes. So therefore, it was never possible for her to get pregnant through the normal
ways,
right? The normal ways that these things happen. The birds and the bees tend to do it. So if that's the case, right, so Rov be'ilos acher habal, does that really apply in this day? Because there is no relationship between be'ilos and pregnancy. Right? The only way she's going to get pregnant is if you take the egg out, you fertilize it, and you stick it back in. So in a case where we're talking about people that are using a fertility clinic, does the rule of rov be'ilos achar abal, is it really true you can get by without any proof? So oddly enough, this was discussed with Rav Yonis and Eibshitz. Now why is that so odd? Because when did Rav Yonis and Eibshitz live? Right, he lived in the 18th century. And when did artificial reproductive technologies like this start?
Not really, the
20s. Right, the late 70s, I think. Louisa Brown? Is that the name?
Yeah.
Right? Right, so I think she was 70s. I think she recently turned 40, I think. Oh, we'll look it up. Or won't. Either way. Right. So it's odd that he would be discussing our case just based on the timing of it all. But in his Perush on the Rambam, he discusses a case that we discussed last year a few times, and that is the person of Nisabra Ba'ambati. If a woman becomes pregnant through being in a bathtub after menstruation. What?
Just turned 40.
Mazel tov.
Don't they do that in our case?
What?
They do this in our case.
They do what? I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's giving birth in the bathroom.
Right, you're 9 months ahead of us, Shlomo. But thank you for understanding what he was talking about. I was totally lost at that point. Maybe for the better. So there's a case we discussed about the Chokas Mechokek, who was talking about Nisavar Be'ambati. So the Rav Yonis and Eibshitz of Bnei Yehuda discusses this case a little bit, which is basically our case, meaning that a woman is becoming pregnant without the benefit of intercourse. That's what it basically is. So remember, we discussed what's the story with the paternity in that case a little bit. So fella, the ki impruvu, he thought yes. For harai mi ben sira the nikra benoshi el yirmia. Right, there's a gematria there. Okay, we discussed this a few times last year. If you forgot it, do chazara.
Just remind us what this is saying.
Right, the case was is that in the event that there seems to be a very rare case,
right,
where in the event that a man was in a bathhouse and a woman came afterwards, she could become pregnant.
Right.
So the question is that child considered the son or daughter of the man that was there first? Well, not the husband necessarily.
Oh, of the man. That...
Of the guy who went swimming in men's hours beforehand. And it basically is what it is. Right? So, and the Chokas Mechokek thought yes, because there is a Medrash which said this actually happened to Ben Sira with Yirmia, and he had a son, Ben Sira, that came out of this. So you see from there that, and Sira is the Gematria of Yirmia, that's where it's alluded to.
This is all ringing a bell, but I didn't remember this.
Okay, clear out the cobwebs. You'll come through. So he says that near the end, I don't think it's right. He says, don't rely on it. That's not masnis and yavamus mishi yeshlo ben mikol makom poter. I mean, the gemara mikol makom lasuye mai. So it says when it comes to chalitza, if he has a son mikol makom in any which way. So what do you mean in any which way? What does that mean? How you get children? V'amim asuye mamzer. It means that even if the child is a mamzer, v'lomim asuye ben kai gavna. A better answer than his son is that even if he had a son through, you know, having to go to the bath at one time, who davar sheino motzei v'yalper yotel b'lishna. It would fit him better. Boy, that's a rare case. And that it would be fitting with Bein Mikol Makom. Ela al kachot tzorach omar, d'lekach lo muki rei v'ahachi mishum d'tanan d'chayv al makosov k'loasov v'kai gavna, yashar l'chayv al makosov k'loasov. He said the reason is as follows. He says, in the event that this happens, then you can't go, and what if this child who was born through the bathtub goes and strikes the father? Would that person still be chayv or not? So in general, we follow the rove. So he said, no, in this case, you wouldn't. The miyad de benohu, b'ofen nebeiz, ofen notias ha-beina noa da'idei ambati, l'katala. How are you going to prove that this is your son?
Also, I'm confused. Are we talking about the biological father or the mother's husband? Who are we talking about?
The biological father.
Okay.
Right? So he said, in the time of the Gemara, there was no way you could have proven that this was the biological father.
Right.
Right? So he says, therefore, he said, because all these rules that we have here of Rov Bilus, Achar Rabba, it's not going to apply here. So based on this, you have here this issue that in the event that a couple has a child through IVF, right, the general rules of paternity approving who the father is out the window. And now we've got a problem that every child that's born through IVF, we have no idea halachically who the father is, because the general rules that we have in other cases can't apply here. So the question is, the only way you're going to do it is in the event that somebody watches the egg be retrieved from the woman, right, confirms that the sperm is of the man, and then, you know, watches them be put in the petri dish, right? Afterwards, again, you don't got to watch it the whole time. You could lock it up in between, right? Then takes the egg and sees it implanted in the woman. Unless somebody does that, we'll have no way of confirming what paternity is. In order to discuss this, interestingly, some people turn to a Mishnah and Demai. What is Demai? Demai are vegetables. Well, which, right, that which trumas and maises have not yet been taken. When I grew fruits and vegetables in Israel, right, I'm not allowed to eat them until I have removed the trumas, the maises, etc. Before it's called demai. So, what? Right, correct. It's a suffix. It's stuff that I don't know if it was taken. Right.
And what does demai mean?
That's what it means.
Okay.
Why? Demai, because we like you. M-O-U-S-E. Right? That's what it's like.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm sure that helped. Yeah. So the Mishnah says, let's say I have flour, and I'm staying someplace, so I want to give the flour over to someone to bake for me. Do I have to take before? Do I have to take afterward? What do I do? Do I take truma from my flour and then give it? Or do I give it and then let them bake it? So two interesting Mishnayos here. Hanosin lepundakit maaser es shehu nosin lov es shehu no tell me mena. I both have to take maaser before I give it, and then when I do it again, when I take it back. Nesha chashuda rachov, because we're concerned she's going to swap it.
The baker is going to swap it.
Right, the baker's going to take this flour, but she'll bake with a different flour. Amar Rav Yossi, ein anu achrayim l'ramayim, eino maaser ela mashu no tell me mena levad. He said, no, we don't got to worry about this. Whatever you get, you take out. Someone else is going to get your flour, and that's not your problem. Now, here's the interesting Mishnah. Hanosin l'chamosa. What if I give it to my mother-in-law? I give flour to my mother-in-law that she should bake for us. Masashu nosin l'av eshehu no tell me mena. Again, I have to do it both ways, coming and going. Because for the son-in-law, obviously she's going to want it to come out nicely. So if she bakes and it fails, what's she going to do? She'll start over again with her own flour. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, rotzi betakanas bita ubusha mechasana. What is she wants to do right by her daughter, but she doesn't want to be embarrassed from her son-in-law. Mauder Rabbi Yehuda, benosim lechamosa shvius ino chashudo rahachiv rachiv asbita shvius. However, it's a problem of shmita. That's more serious. She wouldn't pull something like that. Your mother-in-law would only go so far. The Rambam in his Pirush HaMishnayos tries to explain what's going on here. So he explains as follows, that there's a trade-off. What's going to happen? She's going to bake a loaf of bread. It's not going to come out right. She'll keep it and she'll bake another one from hers to give to them. He's not arguing on this, but he's explaining what's going on. There's a difference. Sometimes it'll say Omer Rabbi Yehuda, which indicates that he's agreeing with something, just commenting on it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, that's saying he's arguing on it. So here he's not arguing. V'yatikun dava ha-mishner kach, v'nei she'i chashuro racho v'asa miskalkel, amr yudah, ma'atam, v'nei she'i she rotza b'takonis b'ita bushma chasana. What's going on in here, she has an inner problem. On the one hand, she wants to do right by her daughter. On the other hand, she doesn't want to embarrass herself in front of the son-in-law. So she knows, by swapping, there's potential that her daughter's going to end up eating demai. On the other hand, and she doesn't want to do that. On the other hand, she also doesn't want to give a collapsed sponge cake to her son-in-law. What's he going to think? So she's stuck. She's got to make a decision. So what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, if it was something as bad as shvius, she would never do that. But demai, it's not tevel, it's not so bad. She'll still go for that.
But wouldn't her flour have been...
So again, her... So the
son... she blows her daughter's flour. So she's going to use her flour. Wouldn't her flour have...
So maybe yes, maybe no. That's what we're saying. You know how mother-in-laws are. Right? So, lefichach, amar, shereb Yehuda, motor of Yosef, pay reshvius. So it comes something as serious as that, but here not so much. So that's what we're saying here. There comes a certain time where people have an inner trade-off. They want to do the right thing, but it doesn't always work out so good. So that's people point out that's exactly what's going on in fertility clinics. On the one hand, fertility clinics do not want to replace the sperm, the egg, the embryo, etc. Right? And in fact, they know darn well if they get caught doing it,
lose their license.
Right, might as well pack up and go home. That's it. On the other hand, you know, they have this pressure that when the CDC comes out with the statistics, maybe their statistics should look as positive as possible. So, you know, different clinics do different things. Some clinics will only take younger women, right? And that will give you better numbers. Right, CDC then, of course, started dividing the numbers, you know. What's the numbers under 35, 35 to 40, 40 to 45, 45 and beyond? You know, so they will do what they have to do. So the question is as follows. To what is the trade-off here? Do they really need to be concerned that they will go and take something that is not supposed to be there and put it in for the sake of the statistics? Or no, is the concern of being caught that much greater that they'll just live with what they have to live with? Many years ago, I happened to be talking to an exceptionally well-known, probably the most well-known fertility doctor in the Orthodox community, the guy who literally wrote the book on this. And we met at a conference or something, and I asked him this question, and I said to him, you know, I note that in your clinic you have a mashgiach. Do you feel that it's necessary? So he said, absolutely not. He said, the fear that I have of ever making a mistake, the first time that a white patient gives birth to a black child, you know, I might as well start working on my shuffleboard because I am out of this business. You know, and you know, I'll be lucky if I don't, that, you know, if my malpractice insurance will cover it before I get thrown out.
So why did he have a mashgiach?
He said, however, I have a clientele that asks for a mashgiach. So based on that, he says, I have it, but would I tell you not to go to a clinic that doesn't have a mashgiach? He said, I'll be honest, I have one, but I don't make this, because I think they're fine also. That's what he said to me. That being said, the overwhelming majority of the poskim very much want to see a mashgiach there. Now, what he answered, you know, was discussing whether he would ever pull something like this, which, you know, again, perhaps he wouldn't, but maybe others wouldn't. But also, you have to remember, there is human error there, and an extra set of eyes watching this is not a bad thing at all.
Look, it's hard for a person who's no gambit.
Well, he opined against himself, so what are you saying about that? He's saying that I have one, but I don't think it's necessary. I wouldn't tell you not to go to another guy.
No, the reason why he's saying he has one is simply not because he doesn't not trust himself, it's because his clientele wants it.
Correct.
I mean,
But that being said, he could have just as easily said to me, I have one, and absolutely, I would never go to one that doesn't have one. And he could have said to me just as easily, right? You know, again, when you if you have congregants that need to use these services, of course you're going to, I wouldn't have. There are a lot of poskim who do say that. Looking at the Tzitz Eliezer, number 8, the mikra shel haras heter hotzas mizera habala azrika achakach rechem ishto. In the rare cases where he's going to allow artificial reproductive technology, remember, Tzitz Eliezer rarely allows it, but he is one of the more, he was the, perhaps the most machmir. Yesh lehashkiach b'sheva einayim. That's a saying. It's not actually on the book.
What's the expression?
So you have to wash with 7 eyes. It doesn't mean you have to wear 3.5 pairs of glasses. Shelo ya'arvevenu chalila b'zeh zera shel isha acher. That there should not be any confusion here. In the event that you are not careful in this, instead of thinking this is wonderful, we're going to build a family, this is going to destroy a family for you. He makes it very clear that you have to do it. Rav Avadya Yosef and Yabir Omer, again, ish v'isha sheyoshu eser shanim yachta v'lo zachu libanos. There's a couple that for 10 years still did not have children. And after working with at least 2 different doctors, they say IVF is the only possibility. Okay, so this is a case of artificial insemination, AIH, not IVF. He would allow in that case. And in fact, if necessary, you can even do it at the time of the month where she is in Nida, as we discussed this morning. But you got to be very careful with this. You need a mashkiach doing this. God forbid she become pregnant with another man. So basically, the overwhelming majority of the poskim support this idea. Now, it's easy to support because what's the downside?
Right, there is no downside.
Right? Interestingly, there is an organization called PUA, which operates mostly in Israel but has spread out over the years. And among the things that they do is they train women to be mashkichot in this area. Why women specifically? The answer is as follows. When it comes to what are the steps that we have to make sure? We have to make sure that the sperm is the man's, that the egg is the woman's, that the combination is with the two of them, and then the embryo, when it gets put in or when it gets frozen and defrosted at some later date, are all going with the right, check the bracelet repeatedly on the embryo to make sure it's the right one. What are the least comfortable parts of this job?
Extracting the egg and putting the egg back.
Correct. The extraction, correct, and the
embryo back.
Correct. Right? It is obviously far preferable that there be a woman there and not a man for tznius purposes, and therefore it is women who tend to do this job. Rav Moshe Feinstein posits in all cases that a woman is a kosher mashgiach. And again, this is definitely not an exception to the rule. There is discussion about it, but I think everybody agrees that a woman can do it. So therefore, there are trained women in Israel, and I believe in America as well, even though I don't think I've ever met one, that in fact are trained for this job to be a mashkiach in a fertility clinic. What? No, she's a yoetzet. Yoetzet. Different story. It's interesting, but I was at a conference. This might have been the conference where Rabbi Willard shut me to a conference in Midtown Manhattan. And this goes back at least 15, maybe 20 years. The Star K had a conference. And under the conference, they were discussing areas that they were planning to expand in beyond food. So there were 3 areas, if I remember correctly, they wanted to get into. One of them they've gotten into fully, and that is giving hashgacha on ovens, Shabbos mode, right? Right. The other one, which I've never seen anyone give a hashgacha on to this day, is banks for ribbis, even though there's been a lot of excitement about Quicken loans over the last year. As far as I know, there's no hashgacha. And this was the third area. and they had just signed up their first fertility clinic, and at the time they were discussing this idea behind it, that the again, I don't know if other ones have names on it, but this was the first Star K clinic that all the children were Chal of Yisrael. You had nothing to worry about. There was Chassidish Shechita. Everything was good. One more question that I wanted to deal with, I'll just deal with it quickly outside, is that is, okay, according to all these poskim, that you need a mashkiach, what if you didn't have a mashkiach? Or what if you had a child by IVF before they invented hashkachas and IVF? Right, before anyone was thinking about it, do you have to be concerned about the hashkacha, about the relationship between you and your child? Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg wrote a letter to Puah where he says you definitely do not have to because there's a competence of mirtis. What's mirtis? Mirtis means to be afraid. Right? Jenny pointed out this is very similar to Chol of Yisrael. The idea is that those of us who are not makbid on Chol of Yisrael, the reason we're not makbid on Chol of Yisrael is because you know who the big hashkacha in Chol of is?
FDA.
The FDA. Right? That the farmers are a lot more scared of the FDA than they are of the rabbi. And therefore, you know, for the sake of their business, they're not going to mix in any chazer milk or any horse milk, etc., or camel milk into their milk, because if they would do that, they probably end up in jail. I would guess for a stunt like that, right? So therefore, the fact that they are so scared of that, that is normal, right? There are other cases out there. Interesting, Carmel wine. The hashgacha on Carmel wine does not check for Trumas and Maisris. The reason they don't is because Carmel wine every year takes a tax loss for the amount that they have to pour out for Trumas and Maisris. The Israeli IRS, whatever that the Reshet Tevos there are, make darn sure they actually spill that out before they give them off the money on the taxes. So the assumption is that that is reason enough. You can rely on that. So too here, as we pointed out, that anybody who wants to keep their job, who wants to be in this business, better not have a situation of somebody giving birth to somebody else's kid. Because if you do that, it's over for you. And the amount of you'll spend the rest of your life is hundreds and svansik being sued by people left and right. Right? So therefore, right, and beyond. And 2-3 Gilgulim from now, you'll still be being sued. Right? So therefore, based on that, obviously a fertility clinic with a hashgacha is definitely better. But if not, we would assume b'dieved that it is fine. Yes?
So this is a little outside the parameter, but it follows. I don't know if you're aware of these cases now of suits with the embryos that were, the temperature got lowered, and there are some families now suing.
Right.
For that. It has all kinds of implications for Roe v. Wade, et cetera. But my question is, it's going to change American, it has the potential to change American law about who's a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Will that, first of all, have you heard about this? And second of all, do you have any thoughts about it?
Yes and no, I don't think it's going to affect this at all. I don't see how this is going to affect it, because this isn't the question of who is a human being.
No, and I get that, but we've had other discussions about
it. Right, not related to other discussions we had, but not
who's
to
a,
this.
Who's a person, is what
okay. We will now call Amarsha to tell her story. We've all been waiting so long. No.